Hello, I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good.
G'day, ballers, and welcome to the Baller Supercoach podcast for the 2026 NRL season. My name is Jono, coach of Hungry for More. And tonight, in our debut episode of the year, we are going to take you through the must-have Supercoach players that are going to help set your team up for success for this season. To get that done, got a couple of must-have Supercoach experts to help me out. First of all, he's the self-proclaimed head honcho of the Baller Podcasting Arm. He is a four-time in a row top 500 finisher. He's the coach of the Terrace Crew. It's Matty Ricks. How are you, Matty?
G'day, Jono. Good, mate. Just want to congratulate you on the promotion to host of the main podcast this season. It's been a heavy chain around my neck. I've loved doing it, but yeah, very happy to hand it over to you. And your name actually suggests that you are hungry for more, and you've received that. So well done.
Yeah, I demoted in my own household when I told the wife I was taking on two Supercoach podcasts a week, but glad for the promotion on the Baller podcast. For our second guest, he's kind of the first recipient of the new interchange rules. It was meant to be Tubes. Tubes just pulled out. He came in so hot that the heat took out the power. So coming in to help him out, he is one of the best strategic thinkers in all of NRL Supercoach. He's a former third-place finisher. It's Danny Boy Ricks, coach of the Casterman Eaters. How are you, Danny?
Yeah, very good, Jono. Love the new name. I hope you're bringing Bo in start of the season. Like, surely he's coming in there.
He's not dual this year, Big Bo.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
no. Oh, geez. That's how much research I've done coming into this
still
podcast.
A
yeah.
Two RF only. Like,
all right.
That's fine, well, surely.
Yeah.
You don't want the meat and potatoes, Jono, at centre wing anymore.
Look, that's enough. On a must have podcast, can we stop talking about Bo Fermor? I'll find reasons throughout the year. I don't know if we need to spend too long on a must have special. But look, before we get into all of that stuff, look, obviously people listening, they know all about baller.live. That's BALLR.live. We saw last year, obviously, the match centre, the fastest in the business. I was getting updates on player scores before they came on my KO subscription. And then the player statistics came in. The base plus power was hugely impressive and important for Supercoach nerds like ourselves last year. Matt, are you able to give us a little bit of a teaser or anything that's to come for Baller this year?
Yeah, Jono, we're just going through the process of making sure the data's all refreshed for everyone to get their preseason teams together. But we're still going to have the player stats and player profiles, player compare, all the stuff everyone loved last year, plus the projections, which are getting an upgrade this year, which is going to be really cool. The live scores once again, but we're getting some massive, massive upgrades to the platform in time for the new season. So we're aiming for mid-Feb, some really cool team management tools so that you can have a look and optimize your team for trades. And the big one is we're going to drop a rate my team, a team rating, so that you'll be able to share that and try to get the top team rating based off the projections for the first round. So trying to show the best team you can build and, striving to get the best possible rating amongst your friends for bragging rights.
So, Matty, are the 2026 stats and figures ready to go? They're on baller.live, ready for people to have a look at?
Yeah, they're all updated. We're just going to do some sort of maintenance stuff just to make sure it's all the UX is good as gold. But yeah, you can get in there now and get all the data from last year. Just making sure you're toggling the boxes. We've got so many filters in there that you can have a look at it however you want. Like you said, the base plus power, that's something that I'm using a lot during the preseason, just to get those underlying numbers to making sure that I'm getting value from my picks to start the year and making sure that I'm picking the right guns, which we'll get to tonight. But I think that's really important is that you're getting the value for the money where you're spending the money.
I think the other big thing as well for people to get around is the Ballers Only Discord. So if you are interested in having a bit of a chat to us here from the show and some other Supercoach like-minded people, make sure you head to baller.live/discord. Jump on in. It will take you a matter of seconds to sign up. You do have to sign up through the website and get the link, but well worth your time. Danny Boy, I haven't seen you much in the Discord for this preseason. You're waiting for an official invite or what's going on?
Yeah, I get a little bit too absorbed in Supercoach for the season, so I really need a long off season. So I just try to get away from it. Unfortunately, this year, Fantasy Premier League has taken over the off season, so the missus isn't too happy there. But I've just been lurking recently, looking at a few things. Lots of people coming in and contributing, so it's good to see.
Yeah, you really need that off switch, I find. Like, through December, like, we were sort of still in the Discord. We're doing a bit of BBL, but I had no interest in NRL. But then once the game launched, I was like switched on, like riding a bike again. But yeah, I completely understand it. I needed the time away from NRL Supercoach.
Tell you what though, that's the BBL Supercoach. Nice little amused boost. I enjoyed that as a little taster over the off season. But
yeah, it was good. It's great.
Fired up and ready to go. The NRL Supercoach, I know for us three, is probably our main priority. So I think we're all pumped and ready to get stuck back into it. Another reminder as well to get on the socials, check out the content that producer Gramsy and the boys at Baller put out. If you are on X or Facebook, it is at BallerNRLs. Instagram is at Baller_NRL. TikTok and YouTube, Baller Supercoach. Look, if you're searching Baller through those things, B-A-L-L-R, you are probably going to get directed to the right place. Fellas, should we get into our must-haves now? Is that enough preamble?
Let's do it.
You beauty. We're going to start with mine. Now, when we were doing this, I didn't realize we all had to have a unique five must-have players. I thought there was allowed to be a little bit of overlap. So I went with a couple of the ones. I took some easy ones off the board that I think you guys will agree with. A little bit of criticism. What was that called? Meat and John Tatoes for my meat and potatoes picks here for these guys. But my five must-have players are Keanu Kitty, David Fifita, Nathan Cleary, Big Bad Brian Tuttle, and Harry Grant are my must-haves. From the surface of that, Matt, Dan, happy for you to jump in. How many of my five, without naming names, how many of those would you guys have as must-haves yourselves?
I own all five at the moment, but I think pending, but as long as Fifita starts, he's must-have, Keeney's must-have, and I think Brian Toto is must-have. Harry Grant is very close, and Nathan Cleary I don't think is must-have, but I do have him at the moment. So I can't argue really, Jono, with those picks.
Danny Boy, what about you? What do you think jumps out from those guys?
Yeah, look, I have all five as well. That's I don't want all five to start the season. I definitely think you can go pod against some of those. Nathan Cleary is probably the one I could drop fairly comfortably. I'm very hot on, I know, Tubes' man, Jaden Campbell, this year.
Yeah.
I think early on, particularly in the season, he can match Cleary. Previous seasons, Cleary has started slow as well. But very rarely are you going to get a very healthy, freshened up Brian Toto under 600K. I think he's a big lock. And for Fifita, the price is just so juicy if he's starting. So those are the big ones for me.
Well, I'm going to break it down just a little bit, even though we have a bit of a consensus on some of those guys. I think the two that we all agree are absolute must-haves. Keanu Kinney, he's priced at a 50 average, which is nothing. That's obviously due to him returning off the bench last year for the Titans and spending some time with limited minutes. He averaged 72 in 2024. He, in his 80-minute games last year, averaged 71.6. I thought in the Tri-Nations, I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch much of that, but the Pacific Championships, not the Tri-Nations. He was absolutely phenomenal. And he's 21 years old coming into this offseason. I honestly think if he was 595K, I would still have him as a must-have player. I think at 495K, he's an absolute steal. And if there's anyone listening to this who doesn't have him in their team, I think you make it a priority to get him in there right now.
Yeah, I mean, people were starting with him last year and they had a buy. And didn't they have a buy in round one or two last year? And people were buying him for like 700K to start the year. So as a pod, he has 1,000 runs a game. He's a great support player. He's going to get the attack. Yeah, there's not a lot not to love there.
Is his role, is he definitely locked in for that starting fullback?
Yeah.
He's so good, Dan, that if he wasn't, I think they'd ask for an immediate release to another club. Like, he's honestly that good.
Who else would they put there?
Brimson.
No, Brimson's center. Oh, sorry. Brimson 5'8".
Well, they obviously he was coming back from a big injury last year, his neck injury, and he started a lot of games off the bench. So that's why his price is so low. I love him. And if he's guaranteed fullback, he's hard to miss there. I think probably a play, though, maybe just starting with the real big guns in fullback. And then maybe downgrading to some of those guys, the likes of Kinney, Faiolongo. So if you started with Tedesco, Turbo, Reece Walsh, and then look to downgrade to free up cash and get a premium elsewhere, that might be a play as well.
All right. My second man is David Fifita, who is one of the most owned players in Supercoach. He is priced at a 49.6 average. He is he's a freak. He's when he's been an 80-minute back rower, he has averaged over 80 in two of the previous four seasons and one of those at a 76.5. I do think there is a chance that he might not be an 80-minute player. I think if you are owning Dave Fifita, you need to come in with your eyes open. That South pack is absolutely stacked. They've just signed Adam Elliott as well to add to their depth. I think it's a really impressive pack, at least until injuries strike. I think even with that being said, though, he, for his career, scores at over a point per minute. He's obviously a tackle buster, an offloader. We know he has that high ceiling. So I think that if he's starting on the edge for South, he's going to get 60 minutes, and I think he's going to go at a point per minute. And I do think there's the chance he could just be an 80-minute man as well. So I'm very, very confident in owning him. It's low risk. You got to get him in.
Way more upside than downside, quite obviously. He's been an 80-minute player for the majority of his career. Like 70-plus minutes, so only really when he gets injured. Or the Titans did some funky stuff there for a while as well, starting him on the bench and things like that. John, I will say I'm not sure I'm that into it, but the knock on Fifita has been a bit about that left side edge for the Bunnies, and Cody Walker really, you know, non-prefer hitting that left edge back row, really preferring to go either wide straight out to AJ or using Trell on the sweep. Obviously Gray will be playing fullback as well. So I don't know, what do you have any sort of comeback to that in terms of how he'll be used, in, especially in attacking areas?
Yeah, a couple. I think that he's never had a back row like Dave Fifita out there before. He's one big one. And also, they've never had a centre like Latrell Mitchell outside that. Like, there'll be times where defenders are looking at Trell and they go short to Fifita. I mean, for anyone who watched South last year, when Talis Duncan was on that left edge, him and Cody actually had a really nice partnership as well. So, I did because I owned him as a massive pod. So, I was well and truly watching closely. And look, Cody was hitting Talis Duncan nice for those short balls. With him being a good line runner. So, no, I'm confident that they're going to find the right spots for Fifita.
Good little, nice little bugle blow there just about owning Talis Duncan, Jono.
I was hurting.
Well done.
A little trumpet.
I was hurting from meeting John Tatos. I had to mention I did own one pod last year. My third guy that I think you guys sounded pretty positive on was Brian Toto, who, I mean, for me, he was just playing through injury the second half of 2025. He never looked like he was at full fitness. He only scored 5 tries in his 13 games last year. His career strike rate is significantly higher. I think he scores 7 in every 10, basically, or thereabouts for his career. A couple of other things that the way their team's set up from the finals run, it looks like he's on that left wing now. I know there's been times where he swapped from left to right, but for the finals run, they did have Dan's man, Isaac Tungall, out on the right with Alamotti on the right, and then on the left was Casey McLean and Brian Toto. And we all remember Casey McLean as a massive glue hands from the start of the year when he wasn't passing to Tom Jenkins last year. He absolutely changed that part of his game as the season went on. In his first 11 games, he only had 2 assists or contributions total. In the next 13 games, the second half of the year, he had 12 assists and contributions. So I think he got a lot better at finding his outside man. The Panthers also scored 49% of their tries down the left last season. So all that comes together. Add on top of that, Brian Toto was elite base plus power. I think at the price of $599K, you would be crazy not to start with him.
Yeah, that's all that's correct. I think the only reason you might not pick him is if you're hot on one of the other Panthers outside backs. So I do think Paul Alamotti and Casey McLean are both good pickups. I probably wouldn't have 2 of those 3. I'd probably just stick to 1. And Panthers, unlike a lot of teams, they're not that left side edge dominant, I believe. Like, they go to the right a fair bit. Obviously, Cleary switches between sides, but he does like going right as well. So I don't think, even though he is on the left edge, I think they can still go right. So looking probably at the percentages coming closer to the start of the season, you might want to pot up with an Alamotti versus a Brian Toto.
Matty, any thoughts on Big Bad Brian?
No, I love him. Like, Dan kind of summed it up perfectly. Like, it's not often you're going to get a fit Toto for under 600. Is it just a bit of sort of variance that we saw Toto not getting all that attack last year? We know he had a few injury concerns as well. I just can't really justify getting a McLean or an Alamotti for more, given Toto's history. I'd fully expect, if I had gun to head right now, I would say that he will outscore those two for the first half of the season.
Are you guys reading into anything about Penrith having a tough draw, Penrith being slow starters in previous years? Is that weighing on your mind when you're looking at Panthers, guys?
Not for me. I still think they're the best team in the comp. if I look back at my ratings to end last season, they were clearly the best team. Everyone forgets that they started 7-point favourites against the Broncos in that prelim final up in Brisbane. So that's what the market thought of them. They're pricing them basically a 10-point better team than Brisbane, which is, you know, it just shows still what an elite team there was. They only came good in that last month or two in the run home to the finals. They are a bit disadvantaged through not having Penrith Stadium again. Obviously, they'll be at CommBank again. I do fully expect them to build into the season like they do every year. They become masters at it, you know, getting themselves, you know, just sort of enough wins to get through that and then get through that Origin period, rest Cleary. As long as Toto's fit, you know, the hamstrings may be a worry. Dan's probably a bit better placed. He's got a pretty big history now of hamstrings, which is a little bit concerning, but, you know, buying round five. That's the Roosters buying round five. But yeah, I'm not concerned about the draw for Penrith at all, just because I still think they're the best team in the league.
Yeah, I think no buys till round 12, I believe, Matty, for the Panthers as well. So he's got a nice good run coming into Origin when you could look to trade him out if the timing's right. My next must-have is another Panther. It's Nathan Cleary. He's priced at an average of 84.5. Look, I just think he's one of those guys who his floor is quite high as far as halves go. He's a good runner of the ball, loves to tackle, he goal kicks. So I think he's a big captaincy option to start the year. That I think you want to have those high upside captaincy options, but you also don't want to have guys who can go too low for the start of the year and get yourself behind the pack. And his numbers were kind of very different towards the two halves last year. Penrith famously were last in round 12 last year. At that point, Clear had averaged 75. For the rest of the season, he averaged 92.7. So I think that even at an average of 84.5, you could still get actually good value for the price he's at. And that's why for me, the captaincy issue or the captaincy solution potentially with Cleary plus the way they started last year makes me think he's a good value pickup and a must-have for my team. What do you think, Danny Boy?
Yeah, it's hard to miss. Apart from the stats around he's a bit of a slow starter to seasons, like, you know, you look at the last 9 games he had, including finals, I think he turned up 5 times. So he's just got that massive ceiling. His consistency is very, very hard to miss. I guess it's just with your team balance being over 800,000 to start the season, can you get someone a little bit cheaper to upgrade elsewhere?
Any thoughts on Cleary?
Yeah, I love him, particularly the ownership. It's not quite pod territory, but it's certainly low ownership. And as you make the point, Jono, captain, he's a great captaincy option. Round 1 v Brisbane away, I would probably be a bit reluctant to captain, but he's just got such a high floor. I'd say it's still more likely than not he loses money over the first 6 weeks. But it's more just the extent of the cash bleed. There's a little bit of risk in the sense that if he does go, you know, go sort of 50-50 in the first 2 rounds, that we're looking at a big decision round 3, because you're really committing to him until Origin if you don't sell him at that point. I really think you're right in the sense that I think he's a value price. I don't think he's overpriced whatsoever.
My last one is, I'll be honest, the one that I'm the least confident about out of the 5 I picked for tonight, but I'm still liking the numbers and what I'm seeing. It's Harry Grant, who's 606K, priced at a 62 average. Now, before last season, since you go back to his time with the Tigers, he had never averaged less than 70 in a full season before. So that is a real outlier season. We're not just talking about a couple of points. We're talking about an 8 points less per game average. He, in the finals, averaged only 58, but in the last 5 rounds of the regular season, he did average 70. The big question is, and Matt, I think you have kind of flagged this one before, was last year an aberration, or is there a role change for Harry in the way they're going to look at using him as a footballer moving forward? What are your thoughts?
The thing I can't work out is the role change because of Harry or because of Bellamy. I would suggest it's probably because of Bellamy. Obviously, they wanted to get a lot more out of Hughes last year. Munster obviously had quite a good year too. Hughes probably had a down year on the year prior. I think he's also looking after Harry a lot as well, because Harry has to do so much work in defence. He wants him to be an 80-minute hooker. So getting him to run the ball so much is a lot to ask. And he's, you know, I think maybe he's worried about burning him out. He's still only, what is he, 26, 27, 28 years of age? Yeah, born 98. So he's turning 28 this year. He's got a lot of footy ahead of him. Yeah, I am a little bit concerned, and especially at the position. Like hooker last year, we saw, Finn, who ended up winning it. He started dual cheap hooker with Sand and Smith, obviously, was the big play there that everyone owned. He, to put the reverse and on that, he's so well priced, as you said, 600K, priced at 61. Like, it is hard to see that not being value. But is that where you want to spend your money, and is that going to really stand you out from the crowd versus someone like a Robson or even a cheaper hooker who could average 10 points less than Harry but be 200, 300K points cheaper? So that's really what I'm going to be grappling with, and I haven't made a hard and fast call on whether I'll start Harry yet or not.
So you're thinking maybe like a Jake Simpkin, for example, at Manly, if they didn't get a hooker named off the bench, or a Reid Marnie at the Cowboys for the same reason?
I'd be fairly confident I won't start with Jake Simpkin, even if there's no hooker, even though I think I don't know why there wouldn't be a hooker. Seibold's never shown any inkling that he wants to run one hooker. I still wouldn't be confident with Simpkin. I'd just prefer to go up to Robson, I think. That's where my head's at with it.
Danny Boy, what do you think? Any last thoughts on Harry Grant before we move on?
I really haven't done the research on Harry. I can't see. We talk about role changes and he didn't run the ball as much, but I'd love to see the raw data from last year as to why it was so low. Same amount of minutes, and just like it was just really an outlier from his last five seasons. So, yeah, possible role change, but yeah, certainly could be back to his best this year.
All right, Matt, that's my five must-haves. All done. So we're going to now pass to you, Matt. You get back in your hosting chair that you're so comfortable with, and I'll try and grapple it back off you after your must-haves.
All right. My five must-haves to start the season are Atevalu Lasati, Storm back rower, Trey Mooney, dual 2RF FRF from the Knights, Valentine Holmes from the Dragons, center wing, Tommy Turbo, our old favorite at fullback, and Dylan Brown, who is currently listed as halfback only for the Newcastle Knights.
All right. Well, take us through, Matt, what your reasoning is, and then Danny and I can just discuss.
Well, I want to hear first, boys, from you guys. How many of those are you considering must-haves, and how many do you own?
I have three of those in my current team. I have Lasati, Trey Mooney, and Dylan Brown. And shout out to Realm for this, because it is being said that if Dylan Brown plays 5'8", he's going to be made available at 5'8" before round one starts, even though he's currently only halfback. So Chanel Harris-Tavita is your kind of price equivalent placeholder if you want to see how your team looks with Dylan Brown in the team. But yeah, I have Chanel Harris-Tavita in place of Dylan Brown at the moment. Dan?
Yeah, shout out to the Discord. That made me realize that Dylan Brown is going to be that big option if he's going to be 5'8". I have currently all five of those guys in there as well. Probably the ones I want to get your reasoning on, Matt, is Lasati and Trey Mooney. Now, this chat, they're going to be both starting, but I mean, how sure are you of that? And are they just automatic out of your team if they're off the bench round one?
Mooney wouldn't be automatic out of my team. Lasati. Geez, that's a big Tubes mistake there. Lasalu mixing up the first name and the second name, mash them together. Lasati, I don't know. You'd have to see the full makeup there. It's been reported today that he's going to win that edge spot for the Storm, he'll be massively owned. So I'm not ripping up any trees here to coming up with a big super pod at 269K. I just think it's worth pointing out that regardless of how many minutes he gets or is going to get with the bench makeup, that he needs to be owned if he's starting on the left edge for the Storm, the right edge for the Storm, I should say. He's taken Eli Katoa's spot. Not too much more needs to be said. He was 31 minutes per game last year off the bench. 31 minutes per game off the bench last year, averaging 27.5, of which all was base plus power. He actually averaged more in base plus power than he did his average overall. So that shows you what a good meat and potatoes guy he was. his average got brought down by his negative stats. It's a question of how many minutes, but I just think as long as he's starting, he'll be in everyone's team who takes the game seriously.
What about even if he is starting, any concerns with Chentley Arrows out for the first two games, suspended, that when Liero comes back into that squad, that Lasardi could then become a bit of a trap off the bench?
Yeah, good question. I think there's just been too much noise out of the squad that he's the guy. Like, even if he was to start at lock and then Joe Chan starts at lock for Liero, I just don't see it. I don't know what, like, why would they talk him up, then start him on the edge only to move him out? Like, why wouldn't they just start Chan on the edge? They got a million blokes who can fill in at lock. So it just doesn't worry me. And at 269K, you can find out. Look, if he gets 80 minutes, he could easily be your third 2RF. Like, it's not, you know, let's hope not. But yeah, I mean, if that's where you're, I'm so, every preseason, I'm just sick to death of plugging in three or four 400K 2RFs that I never want to own, and then
one
always
of them works out.
Trent Liero was one of them a couple of years ago, and he never worked out. Shout out him. Shout out Egan Butcher, another one of those kings. He's a must own as long as he starts. Trey Mooney is one I really want to talk about. I put him in the WhatsApp chat the other day, and there's a bit of a shout out to Rugby League Fantasy Pro here, because they have the reserve grade stats on site, who I like to use for players who come up from reserve grade. Across his reserve grade career, which is 66 games, so not a small sample, Mooney is a 69 average in 61 minutes, which is monstrous. He also has and of that is 50 in pure base. So he's got a massive engine. He can go big minutes, and his output in those big minutes is monstrous. On top of that, in reserve grade last year, he averaged 75 points in 66 minutes per game, including 65 in pure base plus base plus power. So just an absolute beast weapon, kind of like mini Terrell May, I'm going to call him. To Dan's point, is he the new alpha dog? Is he the new Leo Thompson of the Knights? I think that's what they've brought him to be that grunt muscle up front, someone who can play big minutes. We've seen the Terrell May, the Payne Haases, the Keon Kalomatungis, these middle guys with big engines who can have big output and can be really effective. The clubs, you know, they're worth a premium, and he's been signed on reasonably good money from the Raiders. I have no idea why he was stuck in reserve grade for so long. I mean, surely the most obvious reason, Jono, the Canberra pack, exactly right. So,
Canberra pack,
you know,
he was behind often like Adam Adeyota, who I think is a good NRL player, but then he was behind young guys like Noah Martin. He was behind last year. He was often behind Pasami Solo, who's gone to the Knights this year as well. Like, it is interesting that he didn't kind of get his chance with how good he's looked when he's had moments. I don't know if it's maybe it just wasn't meeting Ricky's standards, and we know how Ricky can be with those kind of things.
We're going to need a bit of shop info there, Jono. Just quietly, you might have to get the lowdown for us before the season gets started.
Hot off the clippers. I'll try and get some mail. He cuts the hair of some very important people. Good old Pete the Barber. fan of the show, Pete. Look, and the other thing with Trey Mooney is that price tag, like, it's 442K. I'd love him to be 330K, because there is a chance that even if he is their starting front rower, he might only play 45 minutes, and then you're kind of getting a guy who's priced pretty correctly.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think, again, if he's starting, there's more upside than downside there. I think you can play him as your second 2RF, which is very important, given I'm probably going to want to carry either a Nuff or a bottom dollar front rower as my fourth front rower. Looking at someone like maybe a Paseka at this stage as my third front rower, but there's still a lot to play out there. I don't want to carry any wasted cash at front row, just like every year. I'm all in on Mooney until there's a good reason not to. And obviously we're still 5 weeks until kickoff, so we shall see.
Matt, that's a bit of chatter about the lesser-known guys from your must-haves. What about these Val Holmes, Tommy Turbo, Dylan Brown? What can you tell us about why they're must-haves in your team?
Yeah, so centre wing position, as everyone knows, has become, you know, close to the most important position to get right in Supercoach, with the massive uptick in scoring from the guns in that position. And I don't think the days of going all cheap centre wing are viable anymore. I think you need sort of one to two, maybe three, sort of really high upside guys in the center wing. And once again, a shout out to Realm, who's provided some, he's great. You know, yeah, you got to get in the Discord and get chatting to Realm, because he's just a fountain of information. He's put out some really cool stats around the center wingers tend to their new names every year that pop up in the top sort of five center wings that, you know, so it's not always obvious who are going to be these gun center wings. But so that does sort of put me off some of these other guys. But what I like about Val is he had one score under 58 last year. So if I'm paying up for a center wing, I want to make sure that I'm getting close to the value of their price with someone who can go huge. And we know Val can go huge with that goal kicking. So I think that it's so important that, you know, paying up for guns, that you get guys who have that high floor, high ceiling. And I think Val just fits the bill. Herbie's obviously a lot more expensive than Val. I'm still going to look at Herbie just for pretty similar reasons, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Val be able to match Herbie. So if I was picking between the two, I think it's a pretty comfortable win for me for Val at this stage. And he's really the only one in that sort of 700K range that's really standing out to me as sort of fitting that criteria that I just went through. So for that reason, I'm making him must have. And I'll just add that he only had one ton last year, which I think is sort of below par for him, mentioning that he sort of only had that one score below 58 as well. And yeah, just think that he can actually provide a bit of upside at that price.
Danny Boy, you have any questions about Val Holmes? You said he's in your team. What concerns you about him?
No real concerns, really, apart from play for the Dragons, and depending on how they're going, like obviously less attack than some of the better teams in the NRL. But as Matt said, he's so consistent regardless of how the Dragons are going. It doesn't really matter. And we know from previous years, he can go on such a hot run over four or five games that he then looks like he's a must-have and people are bringing him in. So for just the ability to go on those tears, from round one to round four, if he turns up a couple of times, you're just off to a flyer, and I think people would then chase him to bring him in.
I have just changed my team. I've taken Jacob Kidders out and put Val Holmes in. I thought that was a compelling case. I do think Danny's right to point out the Dragons not being as good. Like the Cowboys were a quite flary attacking team, which probably lent to him getting more 100-plus scores. But that consistency is great. It's not like he's an old man. He's only 30 coming into this season, Val Holmes. It feels like he's been around forever.
29, like isn't he?
Don't know. Google said 30 when I looked it up while you were speaking. But he's not a 34-year-old.
Oh, yeah, he's 30. Sorry, you're right.
Now, Tommy Turbo, Matty, you're just wanting to get hurt again. What's your thoughts on Tommy Turbo at 692?
I just want to say quickly, I think Karaz is a fine pick as well. I bloody love Jacob Karaz, but I prefer Holmes out of the two.
All right, Tommy Turbo.
Look, all right, now this is a bit controversial because I think it's a stretch to say that Turbo is a must-have. I just can't get past this 692K. I want to start with the negatives, though. So he's got injury history. We know probably the most maligned player injury-wise in the NRL. Manly look like they might go backwards this year. They're probably not as pumped up as they've been previously. You know, DCE's gone. Jobo's wearing some sort of bloody guardian cap to training. Siebes has lost 20 kilos just in case they need him off the bench at some point during the season. It doesn't look good for Manly. Let's be straight here. So, you know, he only managed 3.6 tackle busts per game last year off a, you know, 4.3 career average. He was, you know, playing center at times last year, but look, that's all the negatives. Like it's, you know, we all know Turbo comes with baggage. Pros, 692K, great price. 16, price is 69. Like I back Turbo to beat 69 most weeks. Like, you know, a fit Turbo. No DCE, which we've only got a small sample, only two games ever because DCE is so durable. He's got 119 and 72. I'm just going to park that because I don't know how relevant that is. Narrative-wise, it feels good to me. Like, no DCE in the way. Just get out of the way. Give me the ball. Just give me the ball, Tommy Turbo. Like, I just can't see Jamal Fogarty demanding the ball like DCE did. I think that we should get a lot more feed me to Turbo. Their first three games are at 4 points, which we know he dominates. They do have a bye in round three. But apart from that, they got a very nice opening draw, Manly. So, huge caveat to Turbo, but he was so busted last season from round two. We all remember round three, I captained him like so stupidly because I'd forgotten about the flex rule, where he got 24 and had to go off against Para. he never really got back in the game until he made that move to center, like, which was like round 15. And he had a decent run in. His season never got out of second gear. He can get injured again, but the price is just a joke. He's so undervalued if you get him on the field. I'm just going to pray for some variance that we get his good scoring potential. I will say that if you're on the fence about him, that buy in round three is so handy because it means you don't have to pick him up in round three. You can wait to round four to pick him up and not have to worry about a price rise. You will obviously have missed the points in round one and two, but if you're on the fence about him, then that's a little bit of a bailout for you. But currently he hasn't left my side all preseason.
All right, we'll take us through your last one, Dylan Brown.
Dillbags, 5'8", not yet. I'm not as convinced as everyone that he's going to get 5'8". I cannot believe they're possibly going to leave Fletcher Sharp on the bench. Fletcher Sharp is one of the best players in the NRL. You cannot have him on the bench. So I think he should surely start at 5'8" and Dillbags halfback. I know they've been running Dillbags left to train at six of training because Sharp's not Ponga's not training, so Sharp's a fullback or whatever. But look, if he does get 5'8", he's going to be 100% owned or like 50% owned, 50 to 60% owned. He's so obvious at 5'8". He solves everyone's problems, him and Pezzett. It'll kind of nullify him a bit. It'll nullify that position a bit, which will be disappointing, to be honest. I quite like him, though, even if he's halfback only. Like, I halfback one or halfback two. He's, since 2022, he's averaged 74, 76, 67, and then last year, 55. So similar boat to Harry Grant, huge outlier season. He came big for the Kiwis in that Pacific Championships. He should have won the Golden Boot. That was a bit crazy. He didn't. It's very hard to imagine he's going to average lower than 60 to 65. He was ostracized last year at the Eels as well, which is easy to forget. I just think I'm just going to compare him to Moses. I think if he stays halfback only, I think I prefer him to Mitch Moses as a halfback only option in that price range. If he is halfback only, I wouldn't say he's must have, but I will be still giving him a lot of consideration halfback only.
Danny Boy, what do you think about Dillbags? He's in your team as well.
Yeah, are we sure Matty doesn't want to talk about Dillbags or Turbo anymore? Just
sorry.
Quickly.
I had a lot of time to prep for this after with Tubes out. With Tubes is like Tubes coming in too hot and burning out the grid. A ton of notes on the two.
No, it's very good. You're taking every single point. So I'm thinking as we go about some of the points, I'm obviously coming in very hot with the substitution. So I had a few things, but you talked about it exactly. Just wanted to point out on Turbo, as you said, three games at 4 points to start, but then they go Dolphins, Dragons, Cowboys, and Para. And Para's at 4 points. Like, that is just...
Dreamy.
Disgustingly good. So yeah, I'm locking him in for that reason. Dill Brown, you're exactly right. He solves such a problem if he is 5'8", because he is that sort of mid-range price this year. No one else really appeals. You've got to go up to a Munster or, say, Ethan Strange over 600K, and I'm not really that excited for those two, so he definitely solves that issue at 5'8". He is a definite no for me if he's halfback only.
You prefer Moses?
No.
No.
I'd go cheap at halfback, or I'd go Cleary and Campbell. So I'd go really hard at halfback.
I really like, Dan? I really like Cleary and cheap and Campbell at flex with a view to just getting Campbell up to halfback later on as your second halfback and just...
It's tough, though, because then you've got to substitute the second halfback, which is going to be really cheap, and then... It's basically going to take you two trades and two downgrades because you don't want a cheapie in at flex for that long.
No, but you can do a few things there. But you can, that's why it's a flex.
Yeah. It's just, I think you need a bit more cash there if you're going to go down that route.
One last thing on Dillbags, and I'm surprised there's anything left to add on Dillbags after Matt's soapbox on him. I do think he's a great option, but the only thing I don't think you mentioned is that the Knights have an unbelievable run of day games to start the year too. I think they...
Not to start the year, the whole year. I think they've only got one night game for the year.
So that is worth mentioning. These Knights guys, like we all know, or not we all know, people who are new to Supercoach might not. Experienced Supercoach players know that day games generally are better for scoring because obviously the players are more confident throwing the ball around. So you have the Knights who look to play a high attacking upside kind of footy, I think suits them best. They got a lot of good ball runners, tackle busters, and I think Dylan Brown suits that to an absolute T.
Well, Holbrook's meant to be like a bit of an attacking coach as well, isn't he? I can't really remember his time at the Titans, to be honest, but I think he's pretty attacking.
Look, I think it's going to be more attacking than Adam O'Brien, who was almost like Mr. Negative Adam O'Brien with the way Warren they played
Smith's,
the game.
Warren Smith still has like nightmares about them not contesting the ball off the bombs.
But has there ever been a coach who's like coached a team more differently to the players that he has? Like they were built to be a running attacking team. And he just went, no, I want to go through the percentage players. It just didn't suit. I think Holbrook will unlock them a little bit. So I do like Dylan Brown for that reason. Dan, we're finally there. Matt's finished. Let's hear your top five must-haves for the Supercoach season.
Yeah, so I think my whole team is nearly going to be named in this must-have series. I've got a couple of low ownership guys, but then put in a couple of the meat and potatoes kind of, you know, certain picks that you're looking at. I only had sort of 5-10 minutes prep for this, but you know, the big two who probably are in most people's team are Payne Haas up at front row forward and Jonah Pezet. I think one cheapie and one, you know, highest floor in the game in Payne Haas. A couple of low percentage guys in Isaiah Yeo. I think he's undervalued to start the season. I think he's just going to be an absolute rock solid pick at second row forward and do a job over the first 5 to 6 rounds. Maybe make 50 to 100K and then you can look to maybe bump him up to a more attacking upside guy later on. KL Iro, I think he started the season on fire last year. He looked unbelievable. He looked a bit small coming back from that shoulder injury, which is why I think his lower scores back end of season, but I really like him to start the year. And then Latrell Mitchell. I mean, that South left edge for Fida, Cody Walker, Latrell Mitchell, that looks super juicy. And I would say there is a possibility I do start with all three of those left edge guys just to really go on a hot run to start the year. But at the moment, I've got Fafita and Trell and, yeah, like them in my side.
What are your initial thoughts, Matty?
I've just lost him because I didn't have him in the sheet. So, Yo, I like. I think he's in my team at the moment. Here we go. Yeah, yeah. Dan sort of got him on my radar big time. Haas, I've got. He's been a little bit in and out, but it's hard to go past him. KL, I haven't given a lot of thought to. Like I said, I've got Holmes in that slot, but I will have a good look at KL. Dan, on KL, do you think that you mentioned we thought that he came back looking a bit small? Do you think that pec
that's
injury
a bit harsh.
should be good to go there?
It's a bit harsh. I just don't think you can get on the bench press that much when you've got a torn, ruptured pec. So I think he's just had an off season now to just be in the gym, get a few reps in. He's still so young. I think he's still getting stronger and better. So and you know, he's the kind of guy you can get at center wing that even if he's not scoring tries, I think he's still going to average 50 to 60. So very, very safe to start the season.
As it speaks for himself, he'll be. He's the most, I can't ever remember anyone being 70% owned. So, yep. And Trell, I'm finding it tricky. I want more information about Trell and what he's going to be doing. I don't know where I am with Latrell at this stage of the
season. Did you see the beach wrestle between David Fafita and Latrell Mitchell?
It was like two that Komodo dragons going at it.
Oh my word. I didn't think anyone would stand a chance against David Fafita in the NRL doing a wrestle like that, but Trell had him. Like it was just unbelievable. That's just going to be such a hype side as well. I think the narrative works well for Trell, just like a few guys around him, fired up, injury free, hopefully. He was so plagued last year even. So yeah, good one to start the season.
I love him at center. I love being able to have him at center wing. That's so nice.
Danny boy, I've got four of those five in my team. The only one I don't have is KL Iro. I just find 705K non-goal kicking centre He did go on an absolute try-scoring rampage last year. Nearly went at a try to game. I'm not convinced he's going to be able to do that again. I think he's a great player, but I just don't know if he can expect that kind of output when it comes to his try-scoring. The ones I do have, and Isaiah Yeo was one that you put onto my radar. Matt mentioned that he put him on his radar too. I went and had a bit of a look at his numbers, Dan, after you mentioned how cheap he was. So he last year averaged 62.5 and 75 minutes a game. He only had one try and only three try assists last year, which are a little bit down on his usual numbers. We have to go back. 2024, he averaged 74. 2023, averaged 69. And 2022, averaged 66. So I do think that Yeo is well priced. He's obviously not a high upside guy, but he is someone who, when you're trying to just get dependable points when games are tight at the start of the year, I think you're getting good value as well. The other one that I really like in there is obviously Terrell Mitt as well. I do have some questions. He had a minor calf strain at training last week. The calf does, it is a bit of a recurring problem for Terrell. I have concerns around that. But I guess at that price point, if he does have any injuries, you can kind of go up to someone who's a clear gun or drop down to one of the guys who explode who we don't expect to. I also think obviously playing, he's expected to play left centre this year, Jai great fullback. I think that Souths are smart enough to still use him as an attacking focal point inside the 20. I don't think he's just going to be sitting at left centre waiting for the ball to come to him. So I'm confident that he's going to have a role that matches and, you know, still gets that attacking upside and flair. And obviously if Souths are scoring a lot of points, that's going to be great for his goal kicking as well. But yeah, so I've got him in my team at the moment. I wouldn't have him as a must-have. I just want to see how the preseason kind of pans out for Terrell. Look, Payne Haas. I mean, the big thing about Payne is last year the offloads had such a big increase. Last year he got 11.4 points per game from offloads. His previous best before that was 7 points a game from offloads. He really did up that area of his game. But I think there's no reason why I don't think he'll do that again. I think he's that big captaincy option for the start of the year. Like, I think in round one I'm going to have VC, Cleary, C, Payne, Haas or something along those lines and feel confident about that. So, yeah, I like the overall, you know, tone of your picks.
Yeah, with Payne Haas, like Madge McGuire coming off a premiership season, why would you change the recipe?
Like, exactly.
You know, yeah, it's just going to stay. Like, and he's got the highest floor of anyone. I mean, he is 50% owned, but I mean, he's got such high upside as well. I think if you're going, you know, and then you're looking at maybe his biggest rival, which is, what's Terrell his name? Terrell May. Way less chance he's going ton up every week. You know, he'll average 70 to 80. He's priced at that. But Payne Haas, you know, he's got those offloads in him, much more attack. It's just guaranteed. And yeah, the rest, I guess the rest speaks for itself. A lot of guys that are high owned there. I think KL's probably just the biggest sort of take a flyer. And it's about team makeup, I think. I don't think there's many mid-range options at centre wing this year that you can take a flyer on, like who's, you know, who are guaranteed on a left wing or, you know, you're probably looking to go down to someone like a Lehigh Hopewate at 600K, but anything under that is really difficult to find. So I just think you've got to pop up to the likes of Val Holmes and Kale Iro at 700 plus this year.
I think it's sorry, Jono, I'm just on Haas. I'm really, really struggling with Haas. I've been thinking about him a lot. I think all the points you guys raise are really strong, particularly about his floor. I think you're probably right that why would Madge change anything? In saying that, he can only change things for the worse for Payne Haas's Supercoach output. It can't get better. So at 852K, I think it's more likely than not that he loses money in the first 6 weeks than makes money. And the issue that I'm having, though, is how do you find someone who can match or get close to matching in that sort of 600K range, 600 to 700K range at front rower, where you can save that 150 to 200K? So guys like Fanuel Blake and Tarpany are the obvious places to look. But once you sort of get through those guys, it's pretty grim. You're sort of looking maybe at a Couchman, Dan, Toby, not Ryan. I think it's a really, really tough call on Haas, and I think the easy option is to get him in, but I'm going to really have a good think about him for the rest of the preseason.
So you talk about that's as good as he can do, but what's the worst he can do? A bar an injury, right?
His minutes.
So you're basically, but I mean, I can't see that changing at all, right? So it would only be a role change from a premiership winning, you know, formula or an injury that he's going to lose. Even if he has a few quiet rounds, he's not losing more than 100K, in my opinion. So
what about the captaincy? Is he a captain option?
Yeah, he is, definitely. But I mean, I'm probably not putting him in a straight, it's hard, straight captains. And I haven't had a rough look at the draw and how it works, because ideally I probably want a fullback captain each week. But certainly he's the fullback guy every week.
All right, fellas, I'm just going to quickly share my screen for those who are watching on YouTube. And I just want to show you the Baller website. And what we have here is just the round, the ownership percentage so far. And what I want to do is just quickly go through and have a look at the guys who I guarantee kind of places in their team's best 17s, who are well-owned, who none of us had in our kind of top five must-haves. So the first one that jumps out there is Brandon Smith, the cheese from the Rabbitohs. I'd say he's absolutely, barring injury, guaranteed a spot in South's best 17 this year. Exactly what that looks like, we don't know. I have had him in all drafts of my team. I do think that if it comes out for round one and he's named off the South bench, maybe I'd get a little bit of cold feet in that. But at the same time, at the price he's at, like he's 236K. For his career, he sits at around 0.8 points per minute. And that did drop when he plays hooker. But when he's playing that hooker and middle combined role, the PPM lifts. And his Supercoach peak was 2021, where he averaged 68 points in 61 minutes. I'm not expecting 61 minutes per game out of the cheese. I think it's more likely to settle around that 40 to 45 minute mark. So I have him in my team, but there is a world where I don't start the Supercoach year with the cheese. Danny, boy, where's cheese sitting with you?
Yeah, he's definitely my number two hooker at the moment. You know, we look at the history of hooker number two, who the guys you're kind of looking at to either start the season or bring in. The likes of Danny Levi, the likes of Riley Smith, you know, chance they're basically getting less minutes and they're only hookers. But the big thing for the cheese, he can come onto that middle rotation, and I think it's wasted if he doesn't. So I just think even if he is off the bench, he's not going to have that 20-point floor. I think he plays for at least 35, 40 minutes through games, if not at hooker, certainly in the middle rotation, which we know he can score well. So good floor at basically bottom price. He's definitely in my side.
I think the other thing as well with Cheese is there's a bit of narrative stuff going on too. He's now off the drink. He spoke about it on a podcast the other day. He's not drinking. He's had a few troubles. I think that does matter for players. We saw it with Cam Munster a couple of years ago, how much his football and his consistency improved with those kind of lifestyle changes. So I do like a bit of that narrative stuff. Matty, any other thoughts on the cheese?
Yeah, I think he's in my team too. I think it just comes down to the roles of the other cheap hookers, your Owen Paddy's and Talon De Silva's, namely. And are they going to be viable matchups to go against the cheese? Well, Jono, the mate, like you spoke a lot of, you guys seem pretty certain that he might get middle minutes. I was thinking it's more going to be a 40-40 split for him and Mamazella or something like that as at hooker. Souths are pretty well set up with middles, are they not, Jono? Maybe I know they've lost Moali, but.
Yeah, look, they are, but I just think you're wasting one of the best facets of his game if you're not finding at least 20 minutes for him through the middle there. So I do think they will. Mamazella can easily go 80. I don't think he's a man who benefits from a 40-minute role. I don't think it's going to make him any sharper or better at his job. So I expect it to be more likely a 60 minutes-ish for Mamazelis with cheese around 40 to 45 with a combo roll. We'll see how it pans out.
The six-man bench could impact there as well, because I think if you don't need to bring on a center, like everyone will carry an outside back on that six-man bench, and if you don't have to bring that on and you want to get a few more middle minutes out of your bench, that could impact cheese both positively and negatively, I'd say.
Next one on the list that I'm surprised we haven't spoken about at all is the Sandman, or the Colonel, Ethan Sanders, who's currently at 41% ownership. He's priced at 246K. It looks like he's set to win that halfback job, especially with Kobe Black having a few injury troubles at the Raiders in the preseason. It's also been alluded to that he will be the goal kicker this year for the Raiders. So you're getting a starting halfback at a team who came first last year, who's goal kicking. I have had him in the majority of drafts of my team. Just that price is pretty enticing with that role. However, there have been times where I've done two guns. I've had some, you know, lineups I've tried where I've had Mitchy Boy in there as my second half, or I've gone two guns like a Jaden Campbell and a Cleary. But when I am dropping down to a cheaper halfback, I'm going Sanders over Dan Atkinson, who's another well-owned player as well. Why have we not spoken about the Sandman, Matty? What's going on?
I think you summed that up pretty well. I just want to say I said that the six-man bench will both positively and negatively impact the Cheese. I just want to get the record straight there and say it could either impact him positively or negatively. That'd be great. Anyway, I think you just summed up perfectly. I think there's just other options with your structure to go at halfback to go with Sanders. I don't think he's a look, he's pretty can't miss with the goal kicking. Is he going to be a get into 600K? Maybe not. He's sort of a 50 average in reserve grade. You know, that can sort of step up if you're in a first grade playing with better players. Maybe there's more there for him. It's worth noting that he doesn't have much goal kicking in that 50 either. So there's, you know, probably 6-7 points of value there to be had. I completely agree. I'm him over Atkinson. And yeah, it's just going to come down to the structure at halfback.
Last one to mention is Jesse Colquhoun, who is at 37% ownership. None of us had him as a must-have, but that might have been different if we had had this information a little bit earlier, because it did drop this afternoon that our man Cam McInnes, or your man, as Sharks fans, Cam McInnes, is going to be out till May, which means Jesse available at second row forward and front row forward at 333K. Looks like he's going to get a good run of 8 or 9 weeks as the starting lock for the Sharkies. Danny Boy, if you had have had that info earlier, would you have had him as a must-have in your team, do you think?
Yeah, look, I didn't want to say it, but he was in that top five. But I really just wanted Tubes to pronounce his last name to start the year with. So I kind of left him off the sheet. But yeah, no, in all honesty, if McInnes is out till May, he's just a lock and load. That duality is excellent. I think he's going to average minimum 40, 45. He'll be, you know, possibly a 16th, 17th man player in your team. And he'll just be that sort of guy to earn you 100, 150K in time for a nice upgrade, maybe coming into round 8 or 9.
I don't think he's a slam dunk, but I think I'll start with him as well. Like, he averaged in the 5 games he started at lock last year, including the finals run for the Sharks, he averaged 44 points per game in 44 minutes. Obviously, he's priced it lower than that. Plus, I think they obviously like him. They've just signed him to a new 4-year deal. He's clearly well regarded within the club. So you could easily see that 44 minutes a game he had last year bump up.
He's getting better as well. He's coming into that peak. It's that peak front row forward years. I think from 25 to 27, that's kind of when they certainly explode. They really develop their full strength. And yeah, I think he's done his apprenticeship now, and he's ready to break out for 2026.
Matt, any last thoughts?
No, I must have.
Beautiful. All right. Well, fellas, the last little thing that we'll discuss for this episode on the must-have special, and Danny Boy, happy to leave you out of this because you were a very last-minute caller. One thing we've been asked to do was talk about our team build philosophy and how we might be looking. What's a strategy we might be looking when building our team for the 2026 season? Now, Matt, I'm happy to go first if you need a moment to get yours up, or are you ready to go for your team build philosophy for this year?
No, I want to go because I actually want to go because I don't have too much to say on this, Jono, which you'll be pleasantly surprised. Look, I like to stay very flexible with how I think about my team build. I much prefer to absorb the information in the preseason than worry too much about the names that are going to be filling my page. I just think you just really need to see where the main thing I'm thinking about at this stage is where are the absolute gun cheapies going to be, and where do I want to have the cash in my team around that. So the most obvious one is front row forward. I want to be sort of have about $1.2 million on the field, between $1 million and $1.2 million on the field, with a maximum of sort of 550K on my bench at front row forward. So I'm really sort of, that's the position I'll assign a dollar value to when I'm kind of looking at that. But other than that, I'm playing with all sorts of options. Center wing is the most tricky for me, and thinking about how I want to structure that. Trell and To'o are really big enablers there this year. So I think that I'm going to go with Trell and To'o or something similar with a premium, which will be Val at this stage, and then sort of fill out with your sort of lower price, maybe one mid-ranger and three cheapies or four cheapies from there. So that's kind of where I'm trying to keep it pretty simple at this stage. There's no easy answers. It's just sort of thinking about how things are going to shake out as the information rolls through.
Danny Boy, do you have anything at this late hour with you getting called up?
Yeah, look, you could talk forever about what your strategies are at position by position, but I think probably just looking at the angle of having a double up of attacking combinations. So
I love a double up.
Stacks
in the combo. So you're looking at like a Lehigh, Hoppawattie and Turbo to start the season. That run looks really good. You could get off to a hot start. I don't mind Ethan Strange and Podson Young double up as well. I think that looks really juicy. They're both on the left edge for Canberra. Obviously, Canberra had a great year last year. You know that Hudson Young is going to get those huge minutes on there and they're going to him all the time. So looking at those sort of options is probably what I'd go, just to see if you can get an edge over that over the rivals here.
Ethan Strange and Hudson Young would have to introduce each other to introduce themselves to each other, wouldn't they? Has Ethan ever passed it to Hudson?
Look, the combination is basically give the ball to Hudson and then Ethan Strange is there waiting for the backup offload. That's the combination.
He's waiting for the next run.
It's not a short ball to Hudson. But, I mean, if you go back and look at the highlights, I reckon they're both floating in the same areas all the time. So
I love the theory. I love the stack.
That's why you could go the Souths triple up. You know, Cody's probably at a price that you can take the risk. I don't like picking him up. Like, it's just a preference thing for Cody, I think injuries and it goes off the rails a bit too much in Supercoach. So, but certainly, yeah, that, you know, left edge bunny for feeder and Trell, another option. There's plenty out
Trell
there.
Trell and AJ, Dan.
Yeah. Nah, it could
I'm,
be.
I'm serious.
No, it definitely could be. Like, especially for that hot start analogy. You know, AJ can build cash really quickly. I think he's probably priced too much to start.
He's expensive.
Year.
He's so expensive, AJ.
You know, the one I would even maybe go, like the one that I'm not going, Kale Eero and Nico Hines. They play on different sides. They don't have that combination. But some, you know, just think around the teams and what combos you might have. There's plenty of options there.
I think my thing I'm looking at this year that's a little bit different to previous years is around fullback. And I think it's always been really important in the past to have as many gun fullbacks as we can. And I'm just looking at a lot of these cut price fullback options. Like at the moment, my team, it's kind of been rotating between four fullbacks, Keanu Kinney, who we all said was a must-have, he's locked in. But the other three that I'm rotating between are Kalen Ponga, Sua Fa'alongo, and Tommy Turbo. None of those guys are over 700K. Like I'm looking at Lane Teddy, Reece Walsh, which scares me a little bit, and Scotty Drinkwater with the great run that the Cowboys have to start the year. And I'm looking at using that cash there. Matt, you spoke about the, you know, improved importance of center wing and how big that position can be. I'm just finding that a lot of my team builds, I'm discounting at fullback, getting in those guys who I think can maybe not necessarily match the absolute guns, but get pretty close, and then spending up big in my center wing is one strategy I've just been toying with a lot this preseason.
Yeah, no, it's high risk, high reward, the center wing. Like we said, like the names from season to season do tend to change. So it's a bit of a trapeze high wire act.
All right, fellas, I think that just about rounds us up. Debut episode of the year. We are done and dusted. I think we've done well. Hopefully that helps people who are just starting to look at Supercoach for this year and getting their teams nicely set up. We're looking at the moment, going just one episode a week until the trial starts. So our next episode is going to be recorded on Tuesday. C-Mac is locked in to make his debut. It was meant to be Danny Boy as well, but we'll see if maybe Tubes wants to make a debut next week. To talk about the topic next week is going to be our most intriguing players. So some of the guys who we really like, but we have some questions about that we want to talk about live on the pod. So that is going to be a good one. And then once the trials start, the first trial round, I believe, is the 7th and 8th of Feb. So the Sunday Snap, our review show, is going to be making its return on the 9th of Feb. So if you miss Tubes tonight, you'll get plenty of Tubes come the Sunday Snap on the 9th of Feb when we go back to two episodes a week.
He will be chomping at the bit, Tubes, for next week.
What about Jono? We didn't do a pod all year last year together, so just want to say I've really enjoyed, really enjoyed your company. If you ever need a fill-in for the Sunday Snap as well, it'll be, you know, mid-morning to lunchtime, just in case Tubes' power goes out again. It might be nice to get on a few snaps this year.
You two are the best podcast stack since Ethan Strange and Hudson Young.
Right. And also, please remember to jump in. We mentioned the Discord. Please do jump in.
Yeah, get in there.
We want to hear from what the people want to hear for this preseason. There was an idea that Matt had around how we were going to structure our preseason. We put it to the people in Discord. Matt, out of touch, lost touch with the common man. The people didn't want it. So we've changed what we're going to do because of that feedback. So please do jump in. Give us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. We're doing a bit of Rate My Teams as well in there to get some feedback on how we're going. So please do jump in and join us.
We're also going to have questions on the pod from Discord exclusively as well. So if you want to get your questions answered, that is the best place. One, to get them answered in the Discord, but then get a shout out on the pod as well.
Danny, Matt has spoken enough tonight. So Matt, thank you so much for joining us. You are, unfortunately, it pains me to say it, a very talented Supercoach player. So I will be taking a lot of stock of what you have to say in this preseason as you're absorbing and being fluid. I'm going to be listening to what you have to say. So thanks for joining us tonight, Matty.
And, thanks, Jono.
You go get yourself a lozenge. And Danny Boy, can you please take us home for the first episode of the year?
You beauty.